Ahoy, mateys. Welcome to episode 3 of Game Buoy, where we're going to talk about stories that are probably not on your radar, but most certainly should be. With you, as always, I'm Captain Spike, and my first mate, Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today, we're going to talk a little bit about digital distribution news that's come up in the last couple of weeks. We also have for you some news on a surprisingly exciting Sony game that's been announced, which you most certainly have heard about otherwise, but I don't care. But first, I want to talk to you a little bit about Kickstarter. We talked about this a great deal last episode, and I just wanted to follow up and point out we're primarily talking about sort of how Kickstarter is functioning or potentially going to function in the game marketplace. We're not necessarily judging it as a platform for getting, you know, some very brilliant, inventive people to create products that otherwise wouldn't exist. Like, no, it's very cool for some non-gaming stuff, certainly, and I bring this up because my roommate, of all people, is the one who brought to my attention that while we seem somewhat hesitant about Kickstarter, some really, really cool products have been produced as a direct result of it. So there's going to be a link on the site where you can see a really informative chart that the New York Times ran. And, you know, it illustrates that over the last 3 years, all of these really risky products and designs have been brought to market. And it's just really fascinating to sort of see the numbers of what kinds of products are being developed as a result of this sort of groundbreaking idea of financing these ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I guess we're kind of guilty of it as well. But, I mean, the gaming blogs and sites, they're just focusing on it as if it's only for games, and I mean,
well, you know, certainly this plays into a little bit of what we're doing. We're a gaming podcast. We're not a keyboard with heat-sensitive keys that change colors and uses depending on how hot they get. But that's a real thing. I don't necessarily know what or why it does, but I think it's cool that it ended up getting made.
Yeah, definitely.
But that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Because we're a gaming podcast.
No, but I mean, I do think it's also important to acknowledge the fact that it's not just for games, which we did a little bit, but I mean, you know, if anything, gaming specific wise, we'd be more likely to see a spinoff or like a similar concept to Kickstarter focused just on games if it were to evolve into anything further. But I mean,
if it becomes like sort of a major force in the marketplace, I think certainly some upstart is going to want to try to capitalize on that. Because, you know, Kickstarter, I assume they're not for-profit explicitly, but they do take a cut of what's donated. So I think there's probably a way to monetize even the system of, you know, sort of the distribution of those monies.
And yeah, definitely.
I think we probably will see a gaming-specific Kickstarter pop-up, like you say. But Kickstarter, as it currently exists, more than just games. We didn't talk about it because we are a games-only podcast. But it's still really fascinating, and I can't help but look at some of these numbers on this chart and think, I wonder if how gaming Kickstarters are currently funded, I wonder if that's going to change in the long run. Because the other categories, which are heavily funded currently, and in fact are more funded than gaming Kickstarter projects, they all started off with a much lower sort of average donation, which has increased over time. So I wonder if what we're seeing in sort of gaming Kickstarters, if we're not going to see that average itself rise as more people become more acclimated to the idea, which is what I think happened in sort of these other subgroups of Kickstarter types.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, you know, it's interesting that a lot of the minimum donations for the gaming Kickstarters are a little bit, like, you said you've put $15.
I've put $15
into four games, so, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's kind of interesting, especially when you think about some of the, like, the financial stuff with Steam and, like, their sales. But I mean, and I know, like, that's for games that are already out. You know, it's not the funding of the game, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting to consider.
$15, for me, that's sort of my sweet spot I've found for a game experience that I don't know anything about. I'll jump into just about anything for $15. When there's a game on sale on Steam, this happened recently with, like, a Heroes of Might and Magic or something. I had never played any of the other games, but it was like $15, so I was like, okay, why not? $15.
Yeah, that's definitely a good price point, I think.
So, we're going to link this article. As we link every article we discuss here, I advise you to go to our site and check it out. First Mate Slagkick, what's our web address?
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. And now, I think it's time for a little bit of...
News. Oh my god, news.
Okay, so, I want to keep this a little bit brief. This is super mainstream news, about as mainstream news as we're ever likely to cover here. But, Sony has thrown their hat into the ring, of the melee fighting genre, and they're doing a PlayStation All-Stars melee fighter.
Which at first, when I heard it announced, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
Yeah, it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty brazen attempt at sort of wholesale copying the recipe that Nintendo's been throwing out there for, gosh, the last 10 years.
And I mean, and you know how that's turned out for, like, kart racers trying to be like Mario Kart, and even worse, the Mario Party knockoff games.
Oh, man.
Do you remember that there was one with Sonic and Friends? Was that for Dreamcast?
Yeah, Sonic Shuffle.
Sonic Shuffle, yeah.
But, you know, for every Sonic Shuffle, there is... Okay, wait, actually, no, I can't think of a single other party game that I like. It's pretty much only Mario Party.
Yeah, so as you can imagine, we were pretty reluctant to express much interest in this.
Because, yeah, you're going to hear about this at every outlet, every news outlet, you know. Certainly, I think every magazine will end up running this as a cover story. Although, I guess there's like 3 gaming magazines these days.
Well, Nintendo Power probably would not.
Oh, well, okay. That's awful specific.
An official Xbox magazine, or whatever it's called.
Well, goddamn you.
But you get our point.
Yeah, you know, EGM if they still exist, GamePro if they still exist, Game Informer will be busy giving hand jobs to studio devs to get exclusive reveals.
Okay, but are the devs hot? Because I would be into that.
I don't know, I mean, nerdy guys, probably some of them beardy. Could be good.
Anyway, Sony All-Stars.
Sony All-Stars, yeah, so one of the things that I find most fascinating is that of the footage we've seen revealed so far, there's footage of Hades in, you know, Hades, hanging out with Patapons. And all of these Patapons are doing a little war dance around giant Hades, as Parappa the Rapper is fighting. So, I'm actually super excited. You know, I love Melee Fighters. I think back to the Konami crossover Melee Fighter, like Dream Mix World TV, whatever the hell that was called. That was a cool game. The D.O.N., Dragon Ball One Piece Naruto, that was a cool one. Of course, there was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Melee Fighter that was really good. So, in spite of myself, quite excited for PlayStation All-Stars.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not something I'm going to buy because my PS3's dead, but I mean, I'll definitely play it, and it'll probably be fun, you know. Not all the time, but, you know, sometimes how you want to bust out Steam Star once in a while, that's kind of what I imagine that PlayStation Sony All-Stars is going to be like.
Yeah. Let's see. In other news, While we were recording episode 2 of this podcast, Nintendo was having their quarterly Nintendo Direct conference. And, you know, they announced some cool Pokemans stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I'm super excited about Black 2 and White 2.
Yeah, those, they look really good. I'm happy that they're going to have so much new content. I was really worried they were just going to be, like, a rehashed, reheated, re-released, basically. Oh, you know, here's one new Pokemon that ties into the newest movie, and...
a new form for some legendary...
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing that got me most excited, and we're not going to dwell on this too much, but my favorite Pokemon games were Gold and Silver. And the reason being that, you know, you had the full Pokemon experience, and then, oh, hey, you can go back to Kanto and fight all the gym bosses, like, 5 years in the future, or whatever it was.
Spoiler alert, douchebag.
That game came out, like, 10 years ago,
no,
or more.
No, I'm teasing. And that was, no, that was quite awesome. And, you know, there's some indication that this new Black 2, White 2 might have some kind of post-game content like that. That would be cool. And otherwise, this game can basically just be treated as post-game content, so we kind of win either way.
Yeah, I'm excited. I need to get back onto the Black-White train.
Yeah, it's those games are so good. Also super interesting about Pokemon is that they announced an AR app, which in functionality almost appears to be an AR Pokemon Snap-style game.
And I think that pretty much everybody who is somewhat of a Pokemon nerd was wondering when we'd see some sort of Snap-related announcement. And
yeah, it's time. I don't know if those of you out there disagree. Maybe you do. You should drop us a line. Just let us know, what do you think about Pokemon Snap for the Nintendo 64? And in what context, if any, would you like it to come back?
Any context, is what I'm saying.
Right? Yeah, no, I mean, hell, if they put out a Pokemon Snap Virtual Boy sequel, I'd buy it. I would question Nintendo's business sense, but I'd buy it.
Well, that's because you're one of, like, the only people in the world who still has a Virtual Boy.
Girl, I know a store in this city that sells them if you want to buy a Virtual Boy.
Well.
We'll talk after the show. Also announced was that the full version of the Pokédex app for 3DS is going to be coming out for download on the eShop. And something that I thought was really interesting, and I don't have the exact dollar amount in US dollars in front of me, but the full Pokédex version is going to cost like $15. And you know, I know I was just saying that $15 is an agreeable amount for a game experience for me. Game experience does not include Dictionary and Encyclopedia of Pokemon. Like, that's not enough of a hook for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering what's up with that.
And sort of the big news, which I think is probably going to be our segue into our discussion for the day.
Wait, you mean the big news isn't about Kirby's 25th anniversary?
They're also releasing a Kirby's 25th anniversary disc that is going to include a special version of Just Dance that has Kirby music in it. Are you happy now?
Yes, because that's going to be super cute.
No, it totally is. What really upsets me, though, is that there aren't going to be any of the Snoop Dogg remixes of Kirby music. Have you heard any of these?
You know, when we were first talking about this after the conference, you linked me to one, and then that was the first time I had heard it, so.
Well, I wish that that would be on this disc. I don't think it's terribly likely.
And, you know, as you were listening, well, actually, after you listen, go to GameBuie.org. We'll post a couple of our favorites.
Yes, we will. So, am I missing anything else?
There was a sequel to this little game that was kind of successful on the DS, and then they did a version on the Wii.
You are an absolute trollop. The game, of course, that first made Slagkick is referring to is the one I was just going to talk about, and that is New Super Mario Bros. 2. And the reason why this ties into our discussion topic of the week, is that Nintendo has announced that it's going to be the first of its games to be available for digital download day and date with its retail release. So, what I find really fascinating, of course, is that Nintendo, of the big three, to me was sort of the least likely to start taking digital distribution seriously. And I kind of feel like Nintendo putting this foot forward is sort of a real sign of the times as to how this industry is rapidly changing toward a digital model. And kind of we want to talk with you guys today about what our potential hopes and fears are on that topic.
Yes, so anyway, that was our...
News. Oh my god, news.
And of course, as always, if you think we missed a totally important news story, or you have something to say...
Well, you know, if you just want to tell us that a game looks like dung...
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you would like to hear us complain about the price of new Capcom games? Drop us a line. Don't drop us a line to tell us that we didn't cover something that you read about in Game Informer, though. Because probably you reading it in Game Informer means it's not the kind of news we're interested in.
True. Aside from the Sony All-Stars news. But that's mostly because of Parappa.
Yeah. Yeah. So, digital distribution. First Mate, what are your thoughts on digital distribution, generally?
Well, you know... I know it's a very controversial topic because of the implications it has for the future of the industry, but, you know, if you just say digital distribution to me, the first thing I'm going to think of is like, oh yeah, I buy a lot of games digitally now through Steam and Origin. So, I mean, you know, I don't like the long download times, but that's more because my DSL sucks. But, I mean, I like it. It's cool to have a boxed product, you know, but,
Yeah, well, you know, I, like a lot of American gamers, somewhat fetishize nice packaging, so I certainly agree with you there, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
And like, many other gay men, you fetishize nice packages.
Probably that's true, yes.
But, yeah, I mean, I probably more often than not these days go the digital route, and you know, as we kind of touched on with Kickstarter last week, if digital was the only way we would get a Bayonetta sequel or something, I would totally be down.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we didn't talk about this in Oh My God News because it's not Oh My God News, but it is an Oh My God rumor that I'm going to completely step out of our discussion topic for a minute. There's a rumor right now that Bayonetta 2 has been canceled. If this is true, and there's anybody listening to this podcast who can somehow make a difference, please be aware, I will buy it at a high price. That is all.
I will too.
So, and that's you know, let me sort of step back in here by asking you another question about a related but crowbar separation topic here. How do you feel about DLC?
If it's for a game I like, I will buy that shit up.
Excellent. You know, we talked about that a little bit on one of our pirate broadcasts from when we were still with Geeks for Fans. And, you know, certainly my opinion is similar. If I enjoy a game, the idea of having an extension is nearly always agreeable.
And, you know, we also touched on it a little bit with Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, you know, I suppose we have.
Which, another little side note, not to get sidetracked, but one of our friends mentioned that Edie and Kaden, their voice actors, have been confirmed to be going back into the studio, so...
Oh, that's great. That is great. I'm super happy to hear that. So it sounds like this you know, it sounds like this extension of Mass Effect 3, it sounds like it's really starting to gain some momentum, and really it's going to be a big produced affair.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not really trying to get into a huge discussion about DLC here, but...
I just think it is an important footnote to the digital distribution topic.
Yeah, I agree, and I mean, you know, because there's some people who will say that, like, you know, oh, they're intentionally not releasing a full game so that they can make us pay for more later.
Well, I think that that's a topic for a different time.
True.
I'm more focused on removing those politics of the circumstance. How do you feel about buying a digital part, like an additional part of your game digitally that isn't on your game disc? It lives sort of on your hard drive, and if anything happened to your game disc, you'd still own a part of that game that you couldn't access.
Now, that brings up an interesting point. If something did happen to your game disc, you don't have the access to it. I mean, especially with, like, these online pass sort of model that's going on, too. You know, so, I mean, there's some interesting implications.
Well, and, you know, I think about you, and we've discussed this, you know, that your PS3 doesn't read discs right. And when I first heard that, my first thought was, well, I certainly hope you never bought any DLC for any PS3 games, because otherwise you...
Wait, there are games for the PS3?
they're called Uncharted.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's about it, though. No, that's not true, because I also love God of War and Infamous. That's still not very many, but credit to their corner, I buy these games, so...
And, you know, just a little minor side note, that does have some relation to digital distribution. I've mentioned that my PS3 stopped reading discs. One of our mutual friends, her 360 stopped reading discs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is some consideration to be made, you know, does a disc-based system present, you know, technical risks? I mean, that you know, compared to a game system that would only be digital, I mean, such as PSP Go.
Well, and there's, you know, there's a note that I was going to hit a little later, but this is actually the perfect opportunity to delve into sort of the newsy part of this discussion, and what's sort of most current aside from the Nintendo thing. And that is that EA activated a warning to all users of the Rock Band iOS app, telling these users that their app was no longer going to function after the end of May.
Oh, hell no.
Right? Like, that's really inappropriate. And there was a lot of backlash, and EA has now, despite having already posted this information on the game's official website as well, in their FAQ, they're now backstepping and saying that it was an error, this message wasn't really meant to go live. I'm pretty sure that's bullshit. I could have bought it prior to them updating their FAQ on the official website, but after that point, like, no, someone went out of their way to put this information out there. So, to me, it sort of raised a red flag, though. I guess I hadn't really considered if I want to play any of the incredibly large number of digital distribution games I have on my Xbox. Like, let's just say Sonic 4 as an example. If I want to play Sonic 4 in 10 years, am I going to be able to? Like, assuming that my console is still alive, because as we were just discussing, you know, these things break pretty frequently because, you know, they were, for whatever reason, put together in an assembly that is non-optimal for their individual parts. And these things break pretty frequently, but if somehow my Xbox does survive to be 10 years old, will my games even still run? Do they have digital, like, kill switches that are going to make them stop working after a point? Because, you know, my original Mario Brothers cart for the NES still works.
Might have to blow in it a few times, but...
Yeah, I mean, you probably have to blow in it and the console, I don't know, like, shake it around or something, but it'll work. If you can load up the software, it'll work. Are we in a position now where we're going to be able to load up software and be told that we're past the date by which this game works.
You know, it's interesting because I was hanging out in OLR's chat room the other week, and some of the listeners who were chatting were talking about that. That, you know, is EA or Activision or whatever company one day going to say, okay, this DLC doesn't work anymore?
Well, yeah, and that's a good... It's a really great question that I hadn't really started considering too much until, you know, just the last few weeks.
I think the way to look at it is, like, buying a copy of Windows and then... I mean, there's a difference between software no longer being supported and software not working. So it would be like if you had a copy of Windows 7 and then 10 years down the line, you load up your computer and it's like, sorry, this operating system is not...
No longer functional. Well, yeah, and that's exactly sort of what I mean. I don't mind if I would load up, you know, I'm still going to go with Sonic 4 because it's an easy game to keep in mind. I wouldn't be upset if I could no longer call Sega and get, like, in-game tips from expert players.
Do they still do that?
I assume those hotlines don't exist anymore, but I really hope they do. Like, I hope there's still not 1-900 numbers out there like that.
We should start one as an offshoot of this podcast.
Yes. So, I don't really require support, but if I can get the software loaded, I still want to play it, because, dude... I paid for that. I probably paid $15 for that. So, I would really prefer if I could continue playing these fucking things.
Yeah, and I mean... That just brings up a point with this iOS Rock Band. I mean, even if they're, like, stepping back... I mean, the implications of it... Like, okay, it's one thing if they're like, okay, there's not going to be any more DLC for it. You know... I mean, I guess even if they wanted to take it off the iTunes Marketplace, although, I mean, my thought for that is, you know, if someone wanted to buy it, even though it's not going to stay updated or, you know, there's going to be no further updates to it, that's potentially a couple dollars that they wouldn't make, so...
Yeah, to me, I don't see, like, if you want to stop supporting it, then just leave it live and just don't, you know, don't support it.
Yeah, because we have the expectation...
Yeah, exactly.
That after a certain time, it's not going to be supported, so, you know.
Yeah, I don't expect a game I bought 5 years ago to still be getting DLC or having active support. What the Xbox and PlayStation Rock Band is doing, and has been doing for so long, so successfully, that's an anomaly. I don't expect that from anything. I expect support for a new game, and maybe this is sad, but, like, I expect, like, continuing updates for, I don't know, 3 to 6 months. And then after that, I expect that, well, it's gonna run, and aside that, I'm not getting any more patches, or no new balancing, or new guns to buy, or songs to play, or what have you.
Right.
My real concern here, and it just really sticks in my craw... Especially as a retro gamer, you know, I spend a vast majority of my time playing games that are, you know, more than 15 years old, certainly. 15 years from now, am I not going to be able to retro game the games I'm playing right now? Am I not going to be able to play, you know, there was the digital Bionic Commando game that was super good. There's, like, Explosion Man.
Mega Man 10?
Yeah, Mega Man 9 and 10.
9 and 10, yeah.
Like, am I not going to be able to play these games in 15 years? Because that's a serious fucking problem to me. And, you know, maybe, probably, I should have been a more informed consumer in the past and been aware of this.
I mean, my thing is that what legitimate reason would these companies have to deactivate your games? I mean, like we were saying, it's one thing to stop supporting it. I mean, and especially, like, with the internet being as huge as it is at this point in our society, you know, like, you could probably go on message boards or, I don't know, you know, any variety of sites that could be, like, devoted to that sort of thing. I mean, yeah, you could still, if you play Knights of the Old Republic, you could still find patches and, like, unofficial community supports. I mean, I don't think that's an issue, but why would they... What would they gain out of deactivating your game?
You know, I generally try to be optimistic, and I try to be, you know, sort of... I attempt to see everyone's side in the situation, but all I can really see here is that in the case of EA and the iOS thing, maybe they have a new rhythm game coming out soon, and they want to deactivate the old one.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's really cynical to say, but I can't see any other gain from it. Unless, and this is, you know, sort of an important note, I guess it could have something to do with song licensing. Maybe they I don't understand how they could have a circumstance where their contract says players can no longer play this song in this game after a certain date. But that could certainly be why they'd remove it from the iOS store.
True, and I mean, I guess the thing to consider that is that this is a unique, would be a unique situation.
Well, I think the question to ask is this a unique situation? Because we do have other circumstances, if you look on the Xbox Live Arcade, not where the games don't work anymore. That's why this, to me, was so important and so precedent-setting that we had to talk about it. Because there are circumstances on, you know, Xbox Live Marketplace. You look at, they had Mortal Kombat 3 up for a long time, and then they took it down because of rights issues. Doom was up for a long time, took it down because of rights issues. Although, sidebar, that is back up, you know, as of a couple months ago. So, it's not that uncommon for rights issues to get in the way of a game being sold. What's uncommon is that they're hitting a kill switch so that these games can't even be played remotely anymore. And that's why this is... I hope it's a unique circumstance based on rights and licenses, but it opens the door to me for consideration to, is this the inevitable end of how all of our digitally distributed software is going to go? Everything I've purchased on my Xbox over the last 5 years, which is huge. I have bought so many Xbox Live Arcade games. Am I going to be unable to access any of them in a few years? Because that's a horrible thought.
Yeah, I mean, you have, like, thousands of songs on Rock Band
alone. Oh, yeah. In Rock Band alone, I have thousands of songs. And, you know, you think about all of those crazy games I have for Xbox Live Arcade, it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
So... I just think it's something that's really worth consideration. I generally am very pro-digital distribution. I love the convenience of downloading a game. Preloads are my best friend. You know, I have Diablo 3 on my hard drive already, just waiting to unlock at midnight on May 15th. So, I'm a big fan. I have concerns, and I want to start a dialogue. I want people to really start talking about these things. And for whatever reason, I feel like I didn't see nearly enough coverage on this iOS thing this week. It was really disconcerting to think that there's a sort of major issue potentially setting, you know, if not a precedent, then an expectation of what publishers can sort of get away with in this sphere of you know, retail, and no one's really talking about it. So, I don't know. For me, that's really... When I had planned on having a discussion on digital distribution, I was primarily going to extol its virtues and talk about why I love it so much. It's very interesting that in that same time period, I just happened, you know, for this news to have broken. So, do you have any last thoughts on this discussion topic?
You know... I just think that, to borrow a line from Hitchhiker's Guide or Coldplay, if you're basic, don't panic. You know, I just, like I said, I can't think of a reason, aside from, you know, some of the unique circumstances we were talking about with licensing issues, that they would, what benefit would they gain? So, you know, let's just hope that that's not what the future's going to look like.
Yeah, definitely. Well... Do you know what it's time for?
I believe it's time for...
Audio of the Week!
That it is. That it is. So, and we're gonna link this article on our website, as we always do. First Mate, what is our website?
GameBuoy.org.
gamebuoy.org. Name of the article that we're going to discuss today is Why Xenoblade Chronicles Makes Me Want to Punch a Kitten. Now, this is a real piece of games journalism.
And surprisingly, it's not from Kotaku.
Indeed. This was published by Game Informer. You might have noticed I've ragged on them a little bit this episode, and I think this article is why. I lost a tremendous amount of respect for Game Informer when this was published on April 25th.
Well, you know, I think the only people who are reading Game Informer, this is something you have to consider, like, are the kids whose mom went to buy God of War or whatever for their kid, and then the GameStop employees were like, hey, would you like to add a year of Game Informer for only $9.99?
You know, I know that what you're saying is true, and I know that that informs the statement I'm about to make, but to research this topic before we were going to discuss it, I was looking at Game Informer's distribution numbers, and Game Informer is by far, by a fairly large margin, the most read video game magazine in the U.S.
That's depressing.
So, when I see them running an article like this, and this was written by Chris Clue. He's apparently a football player, and, you know, apparently is known in sort of the wider geek spectrum for being, you know, open about being a Warcraft player and being a gamer and writing articles for magazines, and that's cool. I mean, I have a great deal of respect for him. I read his Twitter. I thought he actually sounded really well-read. He was citing, you know, literary works that I myself am a big fan of. Saw pictures of him, like, okay, that's a good-looking guy. So this isn't like a personal attack, but this is probably the shittiest article I've ever read in a legitimate news source in all time.
Yeah.
And I at first I sort of asked myself, you know, should we just treat this like a celebrity column and disallow its submission to, you know, the Lolotaku of the week? Is it inappropriate to include a non-gamer's article here? But ultimately, you know, this was run as, like, a feature. Like, this was, like, straight up Game Informer putting it on their front page, like, oh, this is our opinion, we stand by this. And that's fucking horrible. Let's discuss the article a little bit. Sidekick, you wanna give me a little bit in the way of summary?
So it starts out pretty positive, talking about how it's a great game, but then, I'm gonna read a little bit here. The graphics, dear God, the graphics. I can't decide whether the technical capabilities of the Wii make me want to projectile vomit or take a 12-gauge to my television, and it makes me angry enough to mail a severed unicorn head to Nintendo's main office, because this game deserves better. It deserves better than gasping fish mouths bobbing up and down through beautifully crafted dialogue. It deserves better than jagged-edged, fuzzy textures comprising a breathtaking landscape set within the body of a fallen god. It deserves better than what you forced this game to be, Nintendo. That last part was in all caps.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. Now, those of you...
At least he didn't say it looked like dung, you know?
That is true. You know, and I know that my opinion on this game has been stated here many times. It's been stated in probably every episode of this podcast, certainly in the episodes of Geeks for Fans that we pirate broadcasted. We talked in quite a bit of detail that I think Xenoblade Chronicles is basically the only good JRPG we've seen this generation. And I think it's one of, like, the top JRPGs I've ever played.
You know, I spoke too soon. It's, you know, he goes on to talk about that this could have... Well, he says that Xenoblade Chronicles could have been this generation's Final Fantasy VII. Okay. You know, he could have picked an actual classic JRPG.
You know, I'm going to stop you there. I am no lover of Final Fantasy VII. I did finally have a positive experience playing it last year. But... It really needs to be said, That's a classic. I don't love it, but there are literally hundreds of thousands of gamers for whom that is like the pinnacle of their JRPG experiencing lives. Like, if you ask someone what their favorite JRPG is, I would say probably equal as many times as not, someone is going to say Final Fantasy VII. So for all the people who are going to be like, oh, Suikoden 2, or like...
Chrono Trigger,
or Chrono Cross, or Legend of Legaia. Okay, I mean, I hope not, but someone's got to, right? But for all of the people who give, like, those answers, for each one of them, I believe there would be a Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I know, I have to say that, you know, this just seems to cater to the gamer bro, like, yeah, FF7, like, he could have said, like, Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah, he could have said, you know, Valkyria Chronicles. I don't know.
It's
not that old.
And I'm not saying that fans of Seven have no gaming cred, but I just saying that it's clear that if he really wanted to have a legitimate discussion about JRPGs and why there's a lot about Xenoblade Chronicles that made it this generation's premier JRPG, but by just limiting it to Seven, that's kind of a sidetrack. Anyway, he says that, you know, it's like he's been absorbed by the world of the game, and he's consumed by the thought of playing that game, but... So he says, this game is that good, and it does it all in spite of the absolute turd monster of a graphics engine that Wii poops out on screen. So...
Okay, dude, honestly, I'm gonna have to lose it here. That's not what a graphics engine is. Like, that doesn't mean what you think that means. If you want to see what this graphics engine is capable of, load up a fucking emulated shot of this game being run on the Dolphin emulator, being forced to run at a higher resolution, and you'll see that this graphics engine is pumping out some incredible shit. Now, if you have a problem... Sorry, I don't like when people use terms incorrectly. But, if you have a problem with how this game looks, I think that's okay. I actually truly do. I believe this game to be basically the second coming of JRPGs. I think it's the Jesus of JRPGs. But, if you don't, or you think it could be if only it were prettier and not on Wii, that's a valid opinion. What isn't valid to me is writing this mess of hyperbole and over-the-top, I want to punch a kitten, and I want to take a 12-gauge to my television because there are jaggies. And this article sort of coalesces in, this is what I say to you, Nintendo, it's time to shit or get off the pot. You used to be great at hardware. Hell, you were one of the companies that started video gaming as we know it. That's not incorrect, like, to say that Nintendo started gaming as we know it. But I think the Wii's incredible hardware. I think it achieved all of Nintendo's goals, and I think if you look at the sales chart, it kind of backs that up.
Yeah, I have a lot to say to the extent of I don't even want to get started because this is our little talk of the week, and I could just straight up start ranting, so I'm not going to do that. But
if you ultimately...
Something else that I'd like to point out, which I take issue with, is that this article is supposed to be about Xenoblade Chronicles, but then he just totally takes this opportunity to talk about this great game that he loves to shit all over Nintendo. And I take issue with this this quote. I'm tired of seeing Mario relegated to kitschy ideas because there's no horsepower under the Wii's hood. I'm tired of seeing Link fighting through the temple of brown textures and jagged edges.
I'm sorry, brown textures and jagged edges? Are we talking about Gears of War right now?
Oh!
Now, here's the thing. If you think Mario Galaxy has Mario in space because the Wii is somehow underpowered, you're a jackass. Mario Galaxy, first off, has some incredible art design that basically anyone knowledgeable in art will confirm. Like, that is an incredible composition of colors and shapes to communicate these ideas and sense of scale. It's cool, again, if you don't personally like it, but it's really, it's, this guy is really arrogant, and he's very sort of egotistical as to how much his opinion of these individual games has to say, like, how much that really means. Like, the things you're saying are wrong and bent to your vision, and you're not overcoming the fact that your opinions, I don't want to say that your opinions are wrong, but that the way you're saying your opinions is ineffective and incorrect. You have bent them to the point of being incorrect.
I think what is almost as scary as the shit fest to, you know, to talk like these game journalisms, we'll just use a bunch of shit terms. So the big splattery shit mess of this article is the feedback. Like, there are so many comments on this thing that, you know, like, agreeing with this guy, but I have to shout out to commenter Ryan, who, I mean, it's just some random guy. He says, be careful when threatening kittens. I've seen that turn south quickly. So thank God for Ryan to add a bit of levity to this discussion.
So, it's like this. I'm pointing this out. This is our LOL Taku of the week, because it's an ineffectively written piece of quote-unquote games journalism that uses its own thesis as an excuse to shit on
feces.
Now you're playing their game.
Hey, I should take a big dump, take a picture of it, and send it to Kotaku. I might get a job.
Yeah, but I just continue. You know, they use this article as an excuse to just shit on Nintendo in an unrelated...
That's my thing. It's
a more or less unrelated point.
And don't even get me started on Nintendo bashing. I'll have to talk about that some other time, but... I mean, looking at the point of what we like to examine in our World Talk of the Week, it's fine if you wanted to touch on the graphics affecting your experience, but to take an article about Xenoblade Chronicles and then just totally go off in a different direction. I mean,
and I'll be honest, I do have a pro Nintendo bias, and further, I have a bias against anyone who can't take a game seriously if it doesn't look pretty.
Yeah.
But even still, that having been said, if you have a problem with Xenoblade Saga or Xenoblade Chronicles, I always want to call Xenoblade Saga because of Xenosaga. But if you have a problem with Xenoblade Chronicles' graphics, I think that's an okay thing to talk about. But if you're going to write this article that's inflammatory and full of hyperbole, and it's just going to completely sort of come out reading like a whiny teenager's blog post...
You know, that's funny, because I was going to say, if this was just, like, someone making a live journal post, then I'd be like, okay, it's their fucking live journal.
Yeah,
I would comment and be like, lol, missing the point entirely,
but maybe
this is gaming journalism, that's what's frightening.
Yeah, maybe game journalists could hold themselves up, take a step back, and then write a constructive piece about how they'd like to see the future change, and encourage people to communicate intelligently about this issue.
Instead of talking about taking the dreams of game developers like Monolith Soft and fleshing them down the toilet of GameCube-era hardware Nintendo likes to call cutting edge. And I just have to say, fuck you, because Wind Waker is a gorgeous game, and...
Yeah, Wind Waker is one of the best-looking games I've ever played. Again, not that it's that important. I would have been fine with it looking like Link's Awakening. But I certainly don't dislike the fact that it's pretty.
Yeah, I think this has a much... This could lead into a much larger discussion, so
yeah,
I think
definitely.
For now we're just going to say, hey bro, you know, you might be a hot football jock, but dude, if you want to publish shit like this, go to it on LiveJournal.
In the words of the immortal Wanda Sykes, knock it off!
So, that was our...
Party of the Week!
And, you know, so we're at that point. It's time to go. We've had a great time talking to you. Hopefully you've had a good time listening. We've been a little bit disorganized this episode, but if you have any questions, concerns, feedback, by all means, reach out to us at Slidekick. What is that website?
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. You can also find us at Twitter at
twitter.com/GameBuoyPodcast.
Nice save. For a minute, I was going to punch a kitten and throw it at you. That's how game journalism works, right?
Well, why were you going to punch me for shouting out to our Twitter?
Oh, no, I had simply meant for you to tell them what our Twitter handle was.
Oh. You thought I was just going to talk about Twitter.com?
Yes!
Yeah, have you heard of this? It's like 140 characters or less. Anyways, no, we are GameBuoy Podcast on Twitter because GameBuoy was somehow taken.
Yeah, so whoever has GameBuoy, good on you. I hope you tweet good things.
Actually, when I first looked at GameBuoy's Twitter, there was nothing on there.
I'm a little bit pissed. That is so terribly sad.
We are also on Facebook. Just do a search for GameBuoy. We don't have enough likes yet to have our own Facebook.com/GameBuoy, so please, please go over there before some guy from Iowa or whatever registers that too.
Yeah.
We do have to say there have been a couple of people out there who have liked us and said hello, so thank you for doing so.
Yeah, and by all means, if you haven't yet, please do say hello, give us your likes, subscribe to us on iTunes. These things would all be incredibly valuable for us to really reach out, know who's listening, and what you guys would like to hear more of.
And we like to do a couple shout-outs.
As always, I'd like to say thank you to Orange Lounge Radio. That's OLR.
You know, I'd like to give a little shout-out to them. They just relocated to a new home on the VOG network, Voice of Gamers. Voice of Gaming. I unfortunately don't quite know what the acronym is, but VOG network. So we wish them luck on that new venture.
Yeah. You know, as we've said, we wouldn't be here if not for those guys. They put on a great show week after week for... gosh, like forever, basically.
So, I mean, it's been over 10 years, I believe.
It has, yeah, I believe so. So congrats to you guys. We're super proud of you, and we're so happy that you guys are giving a voice to every gamer out there. Also want to throw out a shout-out to the Nerdgasm Network. You know, Wicked from Geeks for Fans is over there with them. They're putting on a great show. Another group of people without whom we wouldn't be here talking to you today.
Right, and I mean, yeah, definitely. And talk about a great fit. Like, Wicked is just such a good fit with that group of guys, so...
So, ordinarily, I would tell you to go get your World of Warcraft news over at Fabulous Flames, but my understanding is that they won't be doing a new episode for a little while.
Yeah, we're on hiatus, so if you need your... Warcraft news. There's lots of good ones out there, but...
I particularly recommend The Best Little Horde House in Azeroth.
Which is kind of a sister show to Orange Lounge Radio. So.
Yeah. They have a similar relation to Orange Lounge Radio as we have with Fabulous Flames, so...
True, and another one, Girls Gone WoW. We love
There's Girls Gone WoW. We absolutely love those ladies. Syl is fantastic.
Agreed. And if there's any sort of gaming podcast that you know of that you think we should be shouting out, please drop us a line. You can also email us at CaptainSpike is cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org. I'm slagkick@gamebuoy.org. If you ever want to email us, we would love to hear from you. So,
with that, I believe we're done. So, have a good day, good gaming. And be well. We'll talk to you again in probably another 2 weeks.
See y'all later.